Okay, good morning. We're at Hilchot Beit Knesset. Today's shiur is sponsored in honor of Reza Bas Michal. And just to remind everyone to please hold questions and comments till afterwards, unless it's really crucial and short. Okay. Just to backtrack just a bit, because we're talking about, this is obviously an important topic, Hilchot Beit Knesset. So some point out, one should also, Ben Ishchai and others, one should sit properly in a shul. Some shouldn't lean back all the way and like lie down. Shouldn't have your legs one on top of the other crossed. Some say also if you're going to using that to support your sefer so you can read better, then that's okay. Some have a problem with bringing in bicycles into a shul. We already learned cheshbonot and malachot are a problem. So obviously haircuts and shechita is a problem. Reading the newspaper is a problem. At least say surfing the web on your smartphone is probably a problem. We'll leave out the discussion of smartphones. What about for the blind? Can you bring a dog in the Beit Knesset? So Igros Moshe says it's mutar. It's necessary. Yes. Okay, as far as eating, just to recap, eating and drinking. So, according to the Pshat Shulchan Aruch, real simple, it's asur for the regular folk.
No, sorry. It's mutter for a blind person who needs the dog, not someone who has a pet dog who just wants to be.
Correct. Only for the dog is there in order to help the blind person. Right. I forgot exactly what
sorry,
it's called.
A service dog.
That's what's mutar. I did see someone who say that it's not allowed, but and better to leave it right outside. But I think that's the main. Okay. As far as eating, so the Pshat Shulchan Aruch simply read is no one's allowed. A regular person is not allowed to eat in a Beit Knesset. Period. Even in a Beit Midrash, except a Talmid Chacham Midochak is allowed in a Beit Midrash. Again, we said our shuls are usually a batei midrash, as we learn there. And in general, he's not machalik ben chutz la'aretz and eretz Yisrael, whether you're in Israel or outside. So we'll see that many Sfardim and Ashkenazim don't follow the straight, simple reading of the Shulchan Aruch. The Rama, when he mentions of David Cantor pointed out that when I quoted it, when the Rama is Mekel, he says, Afilo Shalom Midochak, just so I don't get misquoted, that's referring to a Talmid Chacham and a Bet Midrash. So even if it's easy for them to eat outside, they don't need to. That's all that the Rama added. Okay. But what about Lemaisa for all of us? So many write that is, if you're learning bikvius, any regular person who's learning bikvius, then for this halacha, they're considered a Talmid Chacham and it's not a problem. What is considered bikvius? So that's a very good question. Everyone has their own interpretation. It probably ranges between 1 to 8 hours. It probably needs to be at least 2-3 hours at the bare minimum. The point is because it's difficult for you to leave and come back. People often could sit down for a shiur for an hour without a problem. And the point is that there shouldn't be bittul Torah. So if you have to leave for lunch in the middle of the day, that's why Chazal said it's okay. But anyway, so that's the question on what is considered kvius. Some are meiko when you have a shiur and you bring food for the shiur because you're kaveya a time and a zman. I mean, some are meiko for a short time. But once you're kaveya, and this is your zman to learn, and the food is brought for the shir, and the food is there to bring people to the shir, so then they're makel for that as well. Also, we're going to see the shul could be built al tanai, and therefore it's understood from the get-go when you build the shul that you're allowing yourself to eat. As we'll explain now, the many rishonim. For example, Zeruah, the Ramban, the Ran, point out that it's mutter to make a shul al tanai. In other words, it has a kedushas beis knesset, which you're allowed to do. That's how it's built, and you're allowed to do certain things, including regular people are allowed to eat. Now, is it only for people who are eating when they're learning, or just to come in and have a sandwich? Probably not just to come in and eat for the sake of eating. But the point is, they hold that this is not the Shulchan Aruch, but this is the more accepted halacha for both Ashkenazim and Sephardim, that we allow the shul to be built al Tanai. Okay, so that's that. Now, when we say, just to point out, when we say al Tanai, yeah, it's here. So then it doesn't have to, so some say it needs to be, you have to say so specifically beferush when you build, but many write it does not have to be, it's just some that's, we know that's al Tanai, and even if they didn't have it in mind, there's a concept of the Beis Din Matana, it's kilu, the Beis Din allowed it. So that's why it's, that's how the al Tanai works. And we see even in the Shulchan Aruch itself, he is matir in certain cases for a Devar Mitzvah. So his example is to be when you make a new month, Ma'abar Hashana, and you make an extra Adar. So that's an example where he himself says it's okay. Also, they point out even for the poor people of the town. So you see, even he holds on some level Al Tanai. And the minhag also is lahakel any kol mitzvah. Anything that's considered a mitzvah, even a small mitzvah, the minhag is to be meko. That includes Shalosh Shittos, an Onek Shabbos, a Siyum, a Yortzeit. Some even take it as it's a meal with friends together, and you have a Dvar Torah in the middle. Depends how far you want to stretch it.
Charity fundraisers or rabbis or political party doing some rallies?
So I would leave politics out of it. But I wouldn't call that a Dvar Mitzvah, but you can... All right, but we'll leave that for you to decide. Now, so obviously it's good to be machmer when possible. It's easy to eat often in the hallway, but doesn't mean you have to. And sometimes when you're machmer, you're also being mako on, you're going to end up losing out on hearing some divrei Torah if you want to be machmer sometimes. If you don't show up, or you're poresh, or you insult a friend by not showing up. So take it all into account. Okay, next thing important, we mentioned real bekitzer is hespedim. Can you do a hesped in a shul? So again, the simple Shulchan Aruch says, the only time you're allowed to do a hesped in a shul, and bring the actual body of the niftar into the shul, that's only if it's for a huge Talmid Chacham of the city. Some extended a little bit to the someone who builds the city and he's financially, or etc. On those lines, maybe the Rav of the Beit Knesset. But generally speaking, there's very few people who could ever be brought inside the shulchan inside the shul for a hesped. But to give a hesped when the body is outside the shul, so according to the Shulchan Aruch, only for Talmidei Chachamim and their wives, but not the body and not for a regular person. So, and in Eretz Yisrael, that's generally what we see. The hespedim are always done by the Levaya, or in the cemetery. But in Chutz La'aretz, often you see the hespedim are done in the shul itself. So obviously there are going to be some who say it's aser, but we know that many people do it. So what's the heter? Now we know that there's obviously a big tzarech gadol for the kavod hameit, so that people will come. And in many places, the burial happens far out of the city, and you're not going to get a proper bekavodika crowd to show up to the hespedim. So it's really important to do it inside the city. So, number one, it could be in this mitzav, lo gazru. That's one way to look at it. Another one I heard is often at a hespedim, you share divrei Torah, and they turn it into a little bit of a shir. And then you add hesped al etzad. So that's another way to get around. The most popular answer is probably, again, it's built al Tanai. Also, the Gemara does say a hesped shel rabim is allowed. So most explain hesped shel rabim refers only to, it's referring to only for the big Talmud Chacham, but it could also be explained whenever you need a big crowd and there's no other place to do it. All right. Okay. Now let's get back inside. Vav, mutar lekanes the Beit Knesset b'maklo uvetarmilo Vavafundato perushimine kisim. Okay, so we're tamile. So basically, a person is allowed to go inside a Beit Knesset with these items. V'yesh osrim likanes bo besakin aroch al berosh megula. So by Harabait it's different, but by Beit Knesset we're allowed to bring these things in. Okay, but some say it's one should not bring in a long knife, because a knife is used to shorten one life, and a makom Beit Knesset is to extend, lengthen one's life. And also, one's not allowed to enter a shul without his head covered. Okay, even without walking Dalet Amot. All right, we discussed head coverings prior, but in a shul, it's certainly not allowed. Okay, Zayin. Yachol larok bo, ubivad sheyeshafshenu beraglav, o sheyesham gemi sheim yarok letocho lo yenira. One's allowed to spit in a shul, as long as you can rub it into the dirt, or you can cover it, or it just falls through the weeds. That's the gemi, just or the straw. Nowadays, it may also be aser lagamrei, because we know it's aser to gross anybody out. There's an iser to do such a thing. The Mishnah Berurah points it out. Gemara Chagiga, and the Ari was Nizhar also from spitting. The Arizal, so okay, not recommended. No, read each one carefully. Vav we said was mutter, the first half. The second half we said is usher in the shul, and spitting, right? But what you okay? You said is mostly correct. But spitting, the Shulchan Aruch said it's okay, but it's not so clear that it's okay nowadays.
You're saying
the Arizal was opposed to it, and most of us are disgusted by it. So I think most of us would say it's completely usher. Okay. Chet. Tit Sha'al Raglav. If you have mud on your feet, or oil kanchal kodem shikanes litpalel, you should clean them before you walk in the shul and make it dirty. V'ra'ui shelo yehi alav lo begadav shum lichloch, and you should not be dirty. Okay. Tet. Noagim behem kavod l'chabdam l'rabtzam. Right, the kavod, it's covered Beit Knesset to keep it clean. V'noagim l'hadlik behem neirot l'chabdam. And we also light candles to it's in honor of the shul. Yud. Even after a Beit Knesset is destroyed, it's no longer used, it still has its Kedusha. It doesn't matter if it's in use or not in use, we have to keep it with Kavod. Again, we're going to see after you sell it, it might be different. It's different. But right now, it's still not sold. It's still a Beit Knesset, but it's not in use. So you still have to treat it with kavod. Chutz mikibud veributz, but you don't have to clean it, sweep it and clean. V'im alu behem asavim. Now you're not using it anymore, and it grows weeds. Tolshim otam umanichim otam imkoma mipeshum agmat nefesh. So you should rip them out, but leave them there. So people, when they see the shul not in use, they feel bad. K'deishiram v'ta'ir rucham v'yishadu livnotam. So you get, and so that you're encouraged to rebuild it or do something to restore it.
Okay. It's been replaced.
I believe even if it's been replaced, until you sell it. Okay. Tzarachian Yud Aleph Im Bishat Binyan Beit Knesset Hitnu Alav Lishtamish Bo. Now, what happens when you decide you're going to make it tonight when you build it? So then mutar lishtamesh bo bechorbano. So according to the Shulchan Aruch, you're allowed to use it for other purposes after it's no longer in use. When it's called the definition of bechorbano. It's no longer in use, and then the tanai works for only afterwards, not while it's in use. That's, again, we said that's the Shulchan Aruch. Because you can't make any kind of tanai while it's in use. V'afilu b'chorbano, l'tashim shmugune, k'gon zriya v'cheshbonot shal rabim, And then for for other mundane actions, you're not allowed to. Lo mahani tana. And then tana'i won't work. That's in chutz la'aretz that it helps a tana'i for afterwards when it's no longer in use. Aval bebatei knesiot she be'eretz Yisrael, but in Eretz Yisrael, lo mahani shum tana'i. No tana'i works whatsoever. And it comes up again, but I will just point out, it's brought by many, including the Mishnah Berurah, the Bir Halacha, that this difference of Eretz Yisrael and Chutz La'aretz only applies to, basically only applies according to the Shulchan Aruch. If we hold that you're allowed to make a tanai, which is the Halacha, you're allowed to make a tanai while it's in use, before you build it for while it's in use, then there's no difference between Eretz Yisrael and Chutz La'aretz. And the Bir Halacha even points out that the Gemara never even says there's a difference between Eretz Yisrael and Chutz La'aretz. It just says that the Batei Knesiot of Bavel was Al Tanai, but it never says that Eretz Yisrael couldn't be Al Tanai. It was just that was the norm in those days. Okay, I think I'm done. Right. So, just out of quick interest, the Shulchan Aruch's opinion is based on Tosfot, but many Rishonim, we basically mentioned this, Rashi or Zeruah, Shita, the Ramban and the Rashba and the Ran, I'll say that a Tanai works. So, okay. All right. I think we set out pretty much everything that needs to be. Yud Bet. All right, Yud Bet. Yesh li zaher milihishtamesh ba'aliyah shal gabei beit knesset tashmish kavua shal ganai kegon lishkav sham ushar tashmishim yesh li stapek imutar lishtamesh sham. Okay, so first of all, yesh li zaher means lechatchila it's aser, or lechatchila one should try very hard. Depends on the Shulchan Aruch how hard you have to try, but it doesn't mean that it's asur. And we will see that it's not mentioned in the Beit Yosef, but many pointed out lahalacha that the Tshuvas Rambam Pe'er Hador says it's 100% mutar, except right over the heichal, the aron itself. So what did we just read? We said that one has to be careful not to make a second story above the Beit Knesset for Tashmish Kavu of Ganai, and so there's different levels of Kanai of Ganai and Kalas Rosh, if it's hasn't been pointed out yet. So here, even sleeping is considered on one level a level of Ganai. And other things, so it depends if you're allowed to or not. So ideally, one should not. So let's keep reading for a moment. The Rama writes, V'kol zeh davka beveit ha-knesset kavua. This is only if you built the shul first. The building is completed. And then you decide, afterwards, you want to build a second story. Shenivne mitchila l'chach. Aval, bayit shi'chadol yachar shenivne. You set aside a room after it was already built. Lebeit knesset. You want to make, after the house is built or the apartment is built, now you want to build inside the one of the floors below a Beit Knesset. So then, mutar lishkav alav. So, if the second story came first for sleeping or whatever the usage is, it's certainly not a problem. Except something really, a real ganai above the heichal. That could be a problem. But otherwise, it's not a problem. The post can point out, also if it's built at the same time, if you build the building and at the same time you're having in mind that there's going to be an upstairs, then it's also not a problem. It's only when you already have an established shul and then you build a second story above it. So lechatchila, that's where it's important. It's only when the shul came first. And even according to the Rambam, it's okay. So there are some who are matirim, except for over the heichal, as we said. Um, what's it called? Right. So it's okay if you want to buy an apartment, and it's not a problem if the apartment comes on top of the shul. Just try and not have the main part of your bedroom right over the heichal. It could be a closet. That's not a problem. Okay.
Commonly see them in hostels. You may have a synagogue on a ground floor.
Right. So in a synagogue, in a hospital, they're all built before the Beit Knesset or at the same time, I believe. So I don't think that's a problem. Also, higher floors are not a problem. Yabia Omer points out it's only for the one floor right above the shul. I mean, but he's also using the Rambam a lot. I remember growing up in a shul in a school. There was a Beit Midrash. People from LA know as Yula or Rambam. So upstairs, above the Beit Midrash, there used to be a dormitory, and later on it turned into offices, and there was a bathroom there. So again, I don't know the history behind it, but as long as it was built on that condition, all at the same time, it's not a problem. Otherwise, it's a little bit of a problem. The main issue would be a bathroom over the Heichal of the Beit Midrash. Okay. I think we're done with this. Okay, the Mishnah Berurah points out also, what about, he does say that there is a heter perhaps for renting. Since it's only on a zmani, it's okay. For a short period of time, temporary. Okay. Another. Okay, so let's go on. Kuf nun bet. Shloli stor shum beit knesset. Not to tear down a shul. Aleph. En sotrim beit knesset kedei livnot beit knesset. Acher shem yireh lahem onesh shelo yivneh ha'acher ela bonim ha'acher. Techila ve'achar kach sotrim ha'yashan. So, again, the simple reading, the simple halakha is always, you never tear down a shul to build. Even you want to rebuild a bigger one and a better one. You don't do that until you build the second one. And then you dismantle or sell off the first one. Because we're afraid that you're going to dismantle the first one and then you never end up building the second one. Okay. Now some are matir, again, one of the reasons, another heter for being matir, well sometimes it's not necessary. If that's a reason or not, maybe not, alone. But often there's another shul in town. So as long as there's another shul in town, some say it's okay, because everyone has where to go to. So even if they get stuck for a while, they're not left out in the cold with no place to daven. Also, perhaps it's okay if you're first at least establish a place to rent. And then you have a place to go to. And it is a machloket rishonim. Some say you're allowed to, if you have no choice. So, v'afilu lo ratzu liso rak mechitza achat l'archivu nami dina hachi. L'chadchila, even if you want to expand the shul, l'chadchila, the way to do it is you first expand on the outside, and then you tear down the inside wall, when you're all done tearing, removing that wall, then you end up with a bigger room. That's ideal if possible. Okay. V'hani mili kesheya rishon chazak. Now that's obvious. That's talking about when the first shul that we want to replace is in good condition. But if it's starting to really fall apart, and it's sotri moto miyad, then right away, since it's falling apart, then we're allowed to tear it down. And you immediately start working around the clock, 24/6. Because we're afraid if you start, if you build it slowly, then it may never happen. In general, you're not allowed to take stones from the old shul and use it to build the new one, right? Unless it's assuming it was in good condition. And you're not allowed to take apart anything referring to the Klei Kodesh or anything that's attached to the building, unless you're doing it to rebuild the next one. Okay, we'll just do a little more. Kuf Nun Gimel. We'll start Dinei Binyan Beit HaKnesset. Okay, super quick intro. That the Aruch HaShulchan lays it out that according to the Ramban, what is the Kedusha of a Beit Knesset? When we talk about Kedushas Beit Knesset, what is it? So according to the Ramban, because of different halachot and variables, the Ramban says it doesn't have real intrinsic Kedusha. We call it that, and we have to treat it ki'ilu zekadosh, but it only has the din of tashmish de mitzvah. But it doesn't have real Kedusha mamish. That's why after you sell it, you can do whatever you want with the shul and with the money, as we will see. According to the Ran, it has a Kedusha rak midarabanan. And that's how he gets around it as well. But he says the Rambam and the Pashtus of the whole sugya is it's midaraisa. And he bases all, any time when it becomes a mutter, afterwards, it's all because it's all done, al tanai. So if it's done al tanai, then really anything goes. As long as it's not a bizui, something that's done of a bizayon. Okay, so Kedushas Beis Knesset. Aleph, mutar lasam beis knesset beis midrash. Avalomi beit midrash mi beit knesset. Right? We always say malim bekodesh ve'maridin. So therefore, you can transform from a beit knesset to a beit midrash, but not the opposite. A beit midrash has a higher level of kedusha. Okay, bet bnei ha'ir shemachru beit knesset yecholim lekach mid damav teva. So, if the people they sell the beit knesset, you're allowed again go up in kedusha. So a teva. Is Hainu Heichal Shemanichin Bo Sefer Torah or Luach Shamirin Lo Sefer Torah? Either the teva could be either the Heichal, the Aron Hakodesh, or it could be the bima. Either way, that's a higher level of kedusha than a Beit Knesset. Machru teva Yecholim Likach B'damav Mitpachat Shel Sefer Torah. Then you're allowed to take it for now. A mitpachat is either the cloth that you wrap a Sefer Torah with it, or the cloth that goes on the bima. Either one. Machru mitpachat, you sell the cloth. Lochim b'damei svarim, you can buy svarim. Hainu shekatuv kol chumash levado, which right, refers to a scroll with the whole chumash inside. V'chan nevim u'ketuvim. You can also buy nevim ketuvim. Machru svarim, you sold it for these, and then it's they point out the kedusha of a chumash has greater than nevim ketuvim, but nevim and ketuvim have a similar kedusha. Machru svarim lochim edemeim sefer Torah. Now you can sell one of these. If you sell one of these, then you can buy a full sefer Torah, which has all five chumashim in it. Right? We're talking about the scroll, not a bound book. Aval ibcha lo harida mikedushasan asar, but to go down is asar. Vafilo imkanu biktzat hamaot davar shekedushato chamura. Even if you bought, you use the money and you use for something that's more kadosh, ein yecholim lashanot hamotar likedusha kala. But now you have leftover money, right? So then, with the leftovers, you can't use it for something that has less kedusha. All of it must be used for more kedusha.